from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia. This is Cleats and Cufflinks.
Hello and welcome to Cleats and Cufflinks. I am here post-championship game, in the kind of post-championship game haze with Dusty Rhodes. Dusty, welcome to the disaster that the MLU office is.
Well, there's less stuff in it now than there was before the championship game. You seem to have sold some things.
We sold some things.
The beer was drunk.
We fousted some things on others. The beer was consumed. So
there are some empty kegs in the back.
There are some of those. Yeah, we have to return those.
Oh, well, good luck.
You get some money back for that.
And I remember that.
Our CFO is very big on
on money back.
Money back. It's one of her favorite combination of words. We had a big game. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But first, I want to say a last thank you to Weyerbacher, our official beer sponsor of the championship game. And in honor of them, we're going to enjoy some of their beer. We have the beer that we had up in the VIP lounge. And they were also serving this at City Tap House.
They certainly were.
For the after party, which was crazy.
They had these for, it was a special, it was like $5 or whatever.
Yeah.
For a 12 or 16 ounce pour or whatever. I've got a small amount of bottle copy here to read.
All right, there you go.
First of all, it says Last Chance IPA with apricot or apricot. Last Chance IPA helps animal rescue organizations. Learn how at www.lastchance.beer. It's the first time I've heard of a dot beer before.
I like that.
But I'm all for animal rescue. How could you not be? It's difficult not to be.
So this is, and I read this, there's box copy too. I should have brought that over for you. You would have enjoyed the box copy. But the box copy does mention that due to the apricots, pours a little on the hazy side.
Well, I don't mind the hazy side.
No, me neither. It's something to note.
Well, you were just mentioning it's a post-championship haze of some kind.
I feel that way sometimes these days. I mean, it's a lot of work, that game. And you get through it. And I had a nice day with the family afterward. And then you come back to the office and, you know, it's regrouping time. And as I said, it's a disaster. So you may notice we're in a different set, those of you who are watching this rather than listening to it. Cheers.
Cheers.
Mm-hmm. That's tasty. You may notice we're on a different set today in front of our lockers, which, you know, there have been things filmed here before. A single light, thus the shadows. but that's mainly because the office is in a state of disarray reserved only for a post-championship game. I wouldn't call our office the neatest of offices at all times, but this
offices.
Is a particular type of mayhem.
You've got extra stuff.
Yeah.
And all the stuff that was here that you could sell or that you could use for the championship game for some way made it over to the field, and now you have to put it back in the slightly organized way that you had it before.
I want to credit Jonathan McQueen with that, too. He worked in his youth for UPS, and his packing skills, phenomenal. We got a 14-foot U-Haul, every space of it was filled. And then I drove it over to the stadium, and I pulled away with the back of the U-Haul still open, because dumping half of that stuff out onto the street. No, we fit it. I just didn't close the door.
I at first thought you were going to say we had to thank McQueen for biking everything back and forth.
He could have done it.
In a rush.
He could have done it.
Because not everything would fit in the U-Haul or something along those lines.
We could have counted on him for that. Got him a basket for his fancy bike. And
I don't know. You just give him one of those bike trailers.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah.
I've
seen some folks working with those. You don't have to go with the fancy bags on the side whose name I can't pronounce.
I just call them saddlebags, but it's not accurate.
Something starts with a P and has a lot of N's and vowels in it.
Mm. Somebody knows.
I'm not good with French words. You're not allowed to pronounce all the letters, so I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah, the French, they're rude about that. They hide pronunciation of letters. Now we've insulted the French.
It's not the first time.
It isn't.
The French have been insulted.
It's very true. But anyway, let's do a little bit about this game. Let's talk about this game.
Love to.
So I'm going to give a little bit of a recap from my perspective. So we just found out today the stadium gave us their official count for the game, which was 3,050 people.
Wow.
It's pretty awesome.
It explains why they're so loud.
It's so loud.
This is one of the few times that we couldn't actually, from the booth, see the number of people.
They're all below
you. We're right above them, and it's not a glass box. It's a metal box, which comes up later when the
lightning
comes.
We'll talk about that a little later when the lightning shows up.
But they were really loud, and it sounded like the sound was coming from all around us, and it gave us a really good energy, both in the booth and in the game, actually.
That stadium itself is loud. It's something about being a giant concrete bowl that just makes noise amplified.
There's nowhere for the noise to hide.
Nowhere at all.
You know, when you go up into the back, there's no like concourse up above.
The sound
doesn't absorb back. So their concourse is underneath the stand. So it just rebounds off the stone wall that you can see from the outside. That's right where the seats end.
Yeah. And it's just a megaphone. So it was funny. I was walking out onto the field about the time the national anthem was about to start. And, you know, Frisbee fans being Frisbee fans, the stands are only partially filled in. I mean, they were only ever partially filled in anyway. This is a 58,000 seat stadium, so let's not pretend it was jam packed. But it was sparsely filled. I'm like, oh man, if this game doesn't have a lot of people here, and I turned around to look at the flag, as one does during these occasions.
Appropriate.
Yep. And the concourse coming in was just packed with people, and people were flowing in the gate, and everybody stopped as they came in because of the national anthem. And they're all stopping and looking at the flag, and it's just backing up, and you're getting this huge crowd, and they just keep coming. And I was like, okay.
Well, I'll say there's a second reason that they were stopping on the way in. They could buy a beer on the way
in. That is also where the beer is being sold. The Weyerbacher beer tent was over on that side. Great amenity for the fans.
There was the Weyerbacher, and there was also, they were selling other beers at some of the other little locations in there.
Yeah.
There was just a lot going on.
There was a lot
to choose from.
There was a lot of options.
If for some reason you didn't like Weyerbacher, which I personally don't understand, I liked them well before they were the sponsor for the championship game. There were many other options, and I think that, it's kind of cliche to say, but, when you're watching sports and you're old enough, you're sitting around drinking an adult beverage, that's kind of how it goes. It's appropriate somehow.
But it fits.
It loosens you up a little bit. Yeah. Keeps you relaxed during the game. Like, people don't watch baseball for the baseball all the time. They go to watch green grass.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And drink. So, like, during the game, I think that actually had an effect on the way that the fans were interacting. They got rude here and there.
They did get a little rude, and we'll come to that. There was some booing.
Sorry, you're still setting up the game here.
I'm setting up the game. They're Philly fans. Stags came down, though. We did some great little podcasts with the Stags pregame. They were great the whole way through.
Yeah, I was just going to say, shout out to all of the Stags.
Every single one of them.
And every time that
they were
more than accommodating of all the irritating requests we had of them to sit and talk with us for a little bit. But they were also, they thanked us for any number of things that we've done over the course of the season, putting out articles, doing all that stuff. It was great.
Yeah.
It was wonderful to hear. We don't always hear the good stuff from the people we work for or with, depending on how you think of players, or we cover, depending on how you think of players.
And I think I can get that, it used to bother me. I'd only get emails when something went wrong, I felt like, and I get
they,
like...
They're emailing you because they want it to be right.
Exactly. And an email is a commitment. Like, it's got to be something pretty important to send an email. So it's nice when you get to see people in person and realize that they are, like, they're appreciative, and they're happy to be here, and they're excited for the game, and all these things. And, you know, they went into a tough situation with a huge crowd of mostly Philadelphia fans that they had to play in front of, which is fun, but also can be, intimidating.
Yeah.
Virtually unintimidated, though, because they were egging the fans on.
Early on.
Early on.
They were engaging with the opponent's fans early on in that game. And I like to see that.
Oh, I approve of that.
Because it gives you this sense of like, we're here and we don't have any fear. You know, like we're ready to go. Whatever you have, like toss it at us, and we're going to go right back at you. And I think neither one of those teams played scared in the game. It was a little sloppy.
Yeah.
Low scoring game.
Really low scoring game.
But I don't think it was due to there being fear. I think it was just like part of it is being extra amped up. Part of it is like just you're playing against a legitimate opponent.
Yeah.
Who wants to stop you from doing everything that you want to do and has some experience stopping teams from doing what they want to do.
Yeah, I'm going to say that I think part of the issue, and let's just get into it. We'll talk about the game now. I have other things to talk about around the game, but we're started. We're here. We're going. One of the things that I thought when I was watching is how good both these teams are defensively. And the fact that, you know, maybe for Portland, you maybe didn't notice it as much until they met a team that had had a lot of success offensively. And when they were just able to get those stops from the spinners, and I think a lot of the sloppy throws, as I was watching the downfield cuts, they weren't really about the sloppy throws, it was just options were limited.
Yeah, I would say that, so I think the spinners would have liked to attack downfield a little more aggressively.
Yeah.
But even though, I mean, the person we talk about when we talk about that is Woodside all the time,
mm-hmm.
because he's your big over-the-top kind
of help
defender.
He had one good block early on, too.
But, right, but so before that, Radoms actually ended up skying him for sort of a deep floaty ball that I thought Woodside was going to get.
Oh, yeah.
But a couple plays later, he gets a layout block on Sickles going up the line. And it's just this moment where you're like, oh, right, so now even Philadelphia remembers that the Stags are out there taking away that deep space pretty aggressively and pressuring their unders. I think a lot of the spinners' longer possessions weren't by their choice. It was that they were being forced into it. That said, if we think about throws deep, you got to talk about Dave Bayer's throw deep to Glazer. As I was talking about on the broadcast, as soon as Dave Bayer released that, I was sure it was too far.
Oh, absolutely.
And then as it got closer to the two players, I was sure that Minashagan was going to get the block. And then, amazingly, Glazer ends up with this fantastic catch in the end zone to sort of like announce that Philadelphia is going to do well today.
ESPN asked us for permission to use that clip this morning.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Hopefully.
It doesn't mean it's necessarily going to make it.
Well,
but we'll
see.
But it was
a quality play, so I hope that it climbs up that little ladder.
I was standing next to a Stags fan up in the VIP lounge when that play happened.
Yeah.
He had come up from Nashville.
Tennessee.
Okay.
Other closer Nashville?
I met a lot of people from out of town. There was a father and son who came out. The son had found out about the game, and so they flew out for the weekend for like a father and son trip to come to the game from Chicago.
Oh.
Really cool. But yes. I was saying this to a fan of Nashville. He was one of the player's fathers, and when that throw went up, I remember him seeming happy. Like, okay, that's a turnover.
That's too far.
And it was not. It was not a turnover.
I met a surprising number of relatives of players over the course of the time that I was in the stadium.
Yeah.
It was
nice,
but I, like,
extended family was out.
I couldn't, like, talk to anybody for a while because I had to keep doing work.
Yeah.
So I had to, like, sort of cut conversations short and walk away, which I'm kind of good at, but...
And the only reason you're seeing
really
people anyway...
To.
Yeah. The only reason you're people seeing people anyway is probably one of the biggest stories of this game, which is the 2-hour lightning delay.
Was it 2 hours? Was it 90 minutes? It was long. I knew.
An hour and a half to 2 hours, somewhere in that range, right at halftime.
Yeah.
That was kind of interesting, too. Like, we got to halftime, and then right in the middle of halftime, we had to clear the field.
Well, there was just before the game, there was a bit of rain and
delayed us 15 minutes.
The closest moment that I have ever been to a thunder or a lightning strike in my life occurred during that, where it just struck right on the outside of the stadium somewhere, just a little bit, you know, a little bit further, a couple blocks away or whatever. I was very afraid.
Ow!
I will say
that stadium is very well protected against lightning. Apparently, you'll notice it, and you sit in the stadium. There are rods,
all the way around,
incredibly encircle it. I'm still not super comfortable with the idea, though.
You don't trust science.
And the stadium was, you know, they're careful about that. Yeah. So when there's a lightning strike within 8 miles, you have to clear the stadium. So we got to halftime, lightning strike, had to clear the stadium, and then we had to wait. And we're watching the radar, and then we get a lightning strike that's 10 miles away, and we're like, ooh. So now it's a 30-minute wait from there, and we can go back in, right?
That's about when I got ready to go back
in. But then one
in.
Hits again at 6 miles, and now we got another 30 minutes to add on top of it. And it just kept pushing back. I thought two things out of it. About three things. Let's do three things. One was the first lightning in the beginning of the game that delayed us for 15 minutes. It was actually kind of earlier, but in order to give players time to warm up, we pushed the game back 15 minutes. But that happened right toward the end of the kids' clinic.
Mm-hmm. Had to clear the kids from the field. I remember that.
Had to clear the kids from the field, but they took them into the gym.
And
the New York
also.
Players who came with them were like still hanging with the kids, still like playing frisbee with them, still working with them. And, you know, all the reports from the parents after the kids had a great time. And, like, it was unfortunate to have a lightning storm, but we are very fortunate to have Anthony Nunez and a few of these players from New York who did such a good job coming down and, like, helping out with that.
I almost got to play table tennis against Randolph.
That looked like a nice table.
There were a bunch of nice tables actually. We had one nice paddle and one of those like
the wooden just a wooden.
He wanted the wooden hard one, and I was good with the other one. But then we had kids come in, and they were like, "I want to play ping pong." He's like, "Of course,
kids.
Here, take my paddle." Right, like I was getting all set to beat him before the championship game.
Have we played ping pong? We haven't played before, have we? Oh, we got to play some ping pong.
I'm in.
All right, we're gonna do that. Do that very soon.
But yeah, there were kids in there. They were doing a lot of the frisbee indoors,
getting a lot of the tosses, the indoor frisbee,
getting the throws up. Also, some kids playing basketball. So what, a lot of why not? Hanging out in there.
Yeah.
Sitting on the bleachers, what have you.
And Penn was fantastic for all this. You know, getting through these kind of breaks is tough. You had to move people down to the concourse, had to move people into the gym. But they, you know, they were very friendly. All their staff was really nice. And they helped get us all through that. And a lot of people stuck around.
More than I expected.
Yeah, me too.
But.
And frankly, you know, I would have understood if everybody left. Like, that's a long time to wait. Yeah. We were in the position where we had the stadium until tomorrow. We're just going to get this game played. But the weather cleared. A big cell that looked like it was coming toward us moved off to the east. And we got to pick up the game again. And, you know, that's the point at which, just shortly into that second half, that Philly sort of like started to pull away a little bit.
Yeah. The beginning of the second half, we knew somebody was going to not come out at the top of their game. There's almost no way to prepare for random delays. Not random, but weather-caused delays of 90 minutes, because that's not, it doesn't happen, right?
It's so too long.
I think the thing to me that stuck out, and I believe I took a picture of this and tweeted it out at some point, was that the spinners were sitting in the stands with like their families and their friends and just sort of sitting around.
Yeah.
And like hanging out, or like maybe getting some encouraging words, maybe like feeling relaxed. Whereas the Stags were like in the visitors' locker room, or like down on the track where some of them were throwing, some of them were kicking around a soccer ball. Like there's no escape for them. There's nowhere else to go. There was no way to like check out and then check back in. And this is something we talk about in Club Ultimate, where you do have these breaks between games. They're usually planned. You usually know they're coming.
But what do you do with them?
Right. So you have this moment where you're like, okay, we're done with Ultimate right now. if you're somebody who loves to sit around and talk about Ultimate, these are the people who want to sit around and talk about Ultimate.
Yeah.
If you don't want to, go take a nap. Go do whatever it is you do. Go read a book. Go like just check out of Ultimate for a little bit and then check back in later. But there was no escape. Like usually there's a tent or your car or just a walk or like anything. But there's nowhere for them to go.
Right.
So I felt kind of not bad exactly, but sort of like how are they going to deal with this when they come back? And I think that Philadelphia really decided to, they really took advantage of some of their opportunities, and both teams played sloppily in both halves. And I think, again, as you mentioned, that was in part due to the defense that both teams played.
Yeah.
But there were a number of drops, miscues, Portland was throwing away resets. It was just...
Well, the big one. The dump to the back of the end zone that Ethan Peck laid out through for Callahan.
There's that.
And then...
But I was going to say, they turned that right back around.
Yep.
Where they essentially threw it to... I can't remember who got the Callahan now for Portland, but Isaiah Bryant threw the...
Yeah, why am I losing who that is? You're right. What was interesting about that moment is I remember being there I was watching that at the time, and I'm like, well, what is Portland going to do? They need something to get back in this game.
We were talking about that on the broadcast.
Callahan.
Like, how can they get back into this right now?
Yeah.
That was late in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
And they were in a 5-point deficit, and they brought it back to 2, or they brought it back to 3, and then they brought it back to 2, and we're like, wow, they're really doing this.
Yeah.
But they needed to do that earlier.
Just a little bit earlier. Didn't have enough time to get all the way back. And in the end, you know, Philly wins their first championship here in the MLU.
So, I mean, quick note on how low scoring that game was.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about, actually.
Well, perfect.
Good timing, because I've already forgotten what you told me.
So the two teams combined to score 25 points, and the Spinners scored 14, the Stags scored 11. That's the lowest score for either of those teams since 2014.
Mm.
In 2014, the Spinners won a game 14-13 over New York.
I think I remember that game, yeah.
One of the stadiums that we've used out here.
Yep.
And the Stags I think I was comparing there to 14 as well. So I think their lowest scoring game was in 2013 compared to this. And neither of them has even been in a 25-point game more often than a couple times over the course of 4 years. So the fact that they were in such a low scoring game is just a total outlier. And I think it was, yes, the defense.
But completely unexpected,
there were errors,
too.
There were dropped goals. There were dropped passes in the middle of the field. There were swing passes that were thrown to the ground. Ground's still not on your team.
I think I was looking at the picks and predictions, and yeah. I think everybody had them in a 35-point-plus game.
Right, and historically, the championship game has been a high-scoring affair. The first year it was
run and
over
gun,
35.
Right? Yeah.
The second year it was 23-17, I think, and then it was 31-17 the year after that. So they scored fewer points in this game than Boston scored in last year's championship game. Like, total compared to Boston in last year.
Yeah, that's
so
a good stat.
It's just the sort of thing where it conspired to be that way. There were it was wetter in the second half.
Yep.
We saw at least one of the wet noodles was thrown. The player just goes to throw it and it just kind of flies off. The other jersey is not really even a throw. It was just kind of on the tight sideline there. So yeah, I think it was a conspiracy. I don't know who was in charge of the conspiracy, but it all conspired to make that game low scoring. It was high energy, as you mentioned.
Yeah, that's
but
the
it was
thing
low scoring.
I didn't even realize how low scoring it was because, you know, I'm running around and I'm watching and then I'm talking to somebody and then I'm running to make sure something's
and
happening.
And then you have a 90-minute break.
Then I'm watching and then the 90-minute break. So by the time I get to the end of it, I looked up at the scoreboard and I was shocked at how low scoring it was because it didn't feel like that kind of game.
Yeah.
It felt like high energy, exciting. Part of that was the crowd.
For sure.
Were so engaged and so noisy. You know, Trey said after the game, like he's never, and Trey's been playing
long
as Ultimate's been around. And, you know, he said, I've never played in front of a crowd like that. And I think it's true, you know.
Yeah.
It was a very engaged, very energetic crowd. And it made me feel like, you know, it didn't make, like the low scoring thing didn't in any way hurt the game. It was a great game. And it was a fun game to watch and be involved in. And an incredible game to watch on camera. I mean, you guys did a great job, clearly, in the booth. But the game itself, we added cameras.
Yeah, it's on cam on each end.
Which gave it a really amazing feel. Also, the angle of the 50 cam being way up high.
I like that a lot.
Gives you just a beautiful look of the field.
As you may not be surprised to learn.
Not surprised. You guys did a pregame show. So
I was just going
to
mention.
Yeah, if you haven't had a chance to see this, you can watch on our YouTube channel. It's still up at mlulive.com.
Check out my slightly messed up tie game beforehand.
You can skip the 2-hour
right.
lightning delay.
People during the game were asking me, well, why don't you guys just fill some time with some banter? I was like, well, first of all, they kicked us out of the booth. Second of all, I'm not sure that's a good spot for me.
I know you have 2 hours of banter in you, though. That's the problem. I'm not sure it's a good spot for everybody listening. We should have just done the Cleats and Couplings episode the break.
We would have needed to talk about something other than Ultimate was the problem, because there was just we would just be talking about how Ultimate's not happening. And that's
here's what's interesting about Ultimate right now.
It's not.
Not occurring.
So in terms of the game itself, I mean, right, the production, I really enjoyed how all that went.
Yeah.
And I felt like Poster and I really managed to, over the course of the season, get into a pretty solid rhythm of working back and forth, when to talk here and there. But
a lot harder than people think.
One of the most enjoyable things this year was really getting to use getting our replay guy Greg to excellent replays during the run of play where he's like bringing the replay up of something that I'm about to talk about, which is eerie. We've talked about
he's
this
predicting
before.
Predicting you.
And it's also getting used to looking
witch.
At the monitor in front of us and using the monitor to talk about the things that I know the people at home can see rather than what I'm watching on the field. And sort of pulling that information appropriately and even trying to time my words for what I know is being shown on replay and things like that. It's
such a level of sophistication.
I really enjoy it. Like, it's such a challenge.
Yeah.
And the more cameras we get and the more adept we get at using replay, the more challenging it becomes for me to speak appropriately.
A lot of inputs.
Dig it.
that's the fun is the challenge. It's a really cool game. Check the website because you can watch this game in most of our cities. I think we're not in New York or Vancouver, but everywhere else that we have, and also Chicago.
Yes,
so those
Chicago.
Two fans who came from Chicago. if you happen to be listening.
Chicago check your local listings. Good distribution in the greater Midwest.
Oh, it's a greater Chicago area thing. Yeah, for sure. Whole Mid-Atlantic. We're going to do a watch party here.
I didn't get my engraved invite in the mail yet for that.
No, it's coming.
Okay.
It comes by pigeon. Yeah, we use pigeons now. I'm told it's the newest thing. All the millennials are doing it. It's
you should probably just check the video for the face I just made it, Nick. I can't quite accurately describe it. To focus on the game itself for half a moment, I should give Charlie McCutchen won the MVP.
MVP, Charlie McCutchen.
Accurately, yep. Because the job that he did against Bjorklund on the day started on the very first point where he got a block on an undercut. And that's something that we've talked about, Bjorklund not having that as an issue.
He does not give up many of those.
And McCutchen scored a couple goals, was constantly harrying Bjorklund all over the field, got a couple blocks deep, was pressuring him on the underneath. But there's that, and there was also Dave Brandolph, who for the spinners was just this constant presence on their offensive line. I think he had over 40 passes, maybe 44 passes on the game. And he more than that, he scored a couple goals on the exact same cut on a timeout play from 15 yards out and then from 20 yards out. It was just, but his quickness is such that when he knows what he's going to do and his thrower knows what he's going to do, it's almost impossible to stop unless you bring help defense over. But they set up their play well enough that it didn't work that way. But he was just constantly getting open on these horizontal cuts, these resets, these short up line cuts, taking advantage of usually a larger defender being on him. So he has the quickness advantage, has that low center of gravity, changes directions, gets really aggressive. I thought the two of them were the standout players of the game for me.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. And, you know, I didn't watch the game as closely as you. Championship game is always the one I watch probably least closely.
During the game, yeah.
Yeah, with everything else that's going on. But I'm excited to watch it on TV in a bit because then I get to pay attention to it more closely. But I did notice that about Brandolph. There was a clip of that was from our far end zone camera behind the thrower. And it's one I saw it that night because Greg pulled a highlight package because I had to send it out to the news stations in the area. And that was that cut that I watched. He literally is just, disc is in, he just went and that was it.
He does a really good job of manipulating his defender's hips.
Yeah.
So he gets you to take like a little half a step and then he's already changing direction before you finish that step. Very irritating to cover.
Rude is what that is. That's just rude. It was a really fun game. And it was, you know, I think we're probably going to have more to talk about this as we look into the stats and we start to compare it to past games. And this game will get more attention, most likely. But I think the big takeaway for me was, as a cap to the season, as an end moment in the season, and a season which, you know, they're long. And there's a lot of things that go wrong.
There's only 13 weeks, but they're forever.
Yeah. It's long. But the thing is that there's a lot of things that occur, and some of them are bad, and some of them are good, and there's frustrations, and there's stuff you wish you did and that you didn't do. And to be able to get to it with this team that works for us here and to have that kind of turnout and that kind of energy around it, and, you know, the financial side of that game was very good, gives you something to say, okay, here's what we can do going forward. And I was thinking about it, you know, what do you do to get people to a game like that? What does it take, right? And, you know, just like an overview of kind of what goes on. You know, we have a 3-week break leading into it. And that 3 weeks is our time to really promote and push this game. And it's done by getting everybody in here working on that. So the focus twists, right? And instead of, you know, the sales team spending all their time on 2017, which they've been doing for the last month or so, or instead of, you know, video just prepping for the next weekend and the next game, we have a hyper focus on this one event, which is refreshing in some ways.
It's the same way for us preparing for the broadcast as well. Like, I don't have to think about I don't have 1 week to prepare for doing the broadcast. I have 3 weeks to prepare. So I should pretty well know everybody's name when I get there.
Yeah.
I should have a good idea of what they're going to do on the field so I can talk about it clearly. It's even more of a challenge because you know you have to get it right. You have no excuse.
Absolutely. And that's the way that we feel. So we spend that 3 weeks. We're out flyering. Yep. We're out hanging up posters. were making sales calls to every major like kids group and camp and school and organization to sell group tickets. We're creating press releases. We're contacting all of our media outlets. We created, you know, promo spots that got run on Comcast. Mm-hmm. You know, and we do a lot of this through sweat. You know, there's not a huge monetary investment. We definitely put money behind it and we're working, but it's a lot of it is the sweat and the impact of the people working here. And you do all that over 3 weeks, and if you get there and people don't turn up, it's a heartbreak.
It's a bad feeling.
So I think it was great. You know, we always want more. We always think we're going to be able to do even more than we do all the time. But, you know, 3,000 plus turnout is a very solid result for the work that everybody here put in.
Yeah.
This is, you know, I say it to them personally, but thank you to our staff. Thank you to our fans. Thank you to the people who came out and supported. Thank you to the players who did a really good job helping us spread the word. I had guys show up with me. I had to set my alarm for
the morning TV.
3:45 in the morning.
Yeah.
So that I could get to the PHL 17 shoot that we did, and 8 guys came out and helped out. you know, that's a sacrifice. Even though it's a fun thing to do, it's a work day. Yeah. And like, you got to come out in the morning and do that and then go to the office. You know, that's something that these guys do for us on a regular basis, you know, when we ask. So the buy-in from the players is huge too. And the end result is noisy stadium.
And even the night before the game, we were out with some of the Stags staffers.
Yep.
With the Nathan and the Will.
Nathan and Will.
And we were.
I don't know if Nathan's one of them. They don't want to be called a staff.
Well, I don't know what the appropriate term to call.
Will
him.
Does work for the dude. Stags. Yeah, the dude. We'll
the
just
man.
Call him, yeah, the man.
I mean, like
Nathan, the man.
The Stags gentleman.
Stags. We're out with gentlemen from the Stags.
Yes. I knew that staffer was the wrong word, but I had already committed to it.
I'm kind of into it. I mean, it's got a West Wing kind of feel.
So we're out with them, Local 44 out here, often an MLU haunt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the game comes on. Like the playoff game from the Spinners.
Oh, yeah.
The Spinners playoff game versus, who the heck did they beat?
Boston.
The Whitecaps. Yeah. I had to see the glass
there. It is.
Comes, we get to put it on the TV and watch it during, like, the night before the championship game. We're just like, yeah, going to this thing tomorrow. This is great. Love this. Saw the promo spots that were up there advertising the championship game. It was a perfect confluence.
And that's a shout out to Comcast, too.
Yeah.
Great partner. In the RSN level here in Philly, and now we're spreading that around the country a little bit.
Regional Service Network?
Regional Sports Network. Yeah. You know, they help us with that airtime, and they gave us additional spots to help promote the game, and now we have this momentum building into their broadcast, which will start on Sunday and go in various cities. So check online. Yeah. You can find out when that is. But it's going to be, yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting to get that exposure, and that stuff's important. All that legwork that we do, you know, the Comcast broadcast, yeah, we live stream games.
Comcast broadcast.
Sorry. We live stream games, you know, we're on the internet, we put up highlights, all that stuff. But the Comcast games reach an entirely different audience. And so one of the things that we did prior to this game was we went to local businesses and we gave them a couple of tickets and said, invite some of your employees out. And we went all around and did this. Went to, I don't know, 1,000 businesses and did this all throughout the city. And so many times we were like, oh yeah, I see you guys on Comcast. I've watched you before. And the thing about marketing is multiple touches, right? They see you on Comcast, that's one touch. They see a poster, that's another. They see a flyer, that's another. They get a ticket, they're like, I've seen this a bunch of times, maybe I'll check it out.
This is a legitimate thing.
Yeah, this is a real thing that people do. Maybe I'll go look at it. And so that was great. And judging from the way the numbers played out and the ticket sales played out, definitely a bunch of those tickets that we gave to these businesses turned into people at the game, which you hope will turn into a certain percentage buying tickets and coming out next year.
In the future, yeah.
And that's the investment that you make. That legwork, you know, that gift of a ticket, that legwork, and all those touches that go on before it, that's the investment in next year's crowds. So we'll see. We'll see how that plays out.
Get that staff back to work on next year already.
Already
is
done.
Is it time?
We've already started. What did I say at the? We got back here on Monday, and I said the season is dead. Long live the season.
there's no other way to approach it. It's the same way for me. I'm trying to prepare for next year already.
This is where we start. This is where we start.
What up next?
That's the great thing about, you know, it's a weird thing to work in a sport because you have this season thing, which kind of sits at the core of it. And there's kind of, I explained it to someone before, that there's all this, like, nuance to the off season. You're making decisions, you're changing things, you're creating projects, you're getting out of new projects, you're going, and then you hit the season, it's like,
poof. Right, then there's, you don't
then you're
doing
on a
else.
Rail.
Yeah.
For however long that is, because the being able to change anything in the course of that is so dangerous that you're just reacting and riding this train car down a rail, pulling people back in occasionally, throwing stuff out occasionally, but you're riding, and then you get to the end of it and you're back to this again where you get an opportunity to regroup, to reset. There's no, some people think of it like, well, your season's over, it should be easier.
No.
It's,
to make the season happen, you got to do the work before the season.
So much work. But I like it. I love that stuff and looking
so.
Forward to it. Yeah.
Considering how much time you spend doing
I just,
it.
I just spent a considerable amount of time on it.
It's not all just cleats, cufflinks, and...
No, you can't just sit and
beers.
Talk to Dusty and drink beer all the time. Unless, is there a job? Is there a job there?
No. I mean, my dad's in his off season as a teacher right now.
So he kind of has that job.
Frequently visiting the house. Yeah, right. So we make that his job from time to time.
All right. Well, he deserves it more
Keeps
than I
company.
Do. Well, that's all the time we have really for today. Oh,
I'll
let's do this quick.
Really quick shout.
Quick shout out to Dusty's shirt of the day.
This is a filthy jersey. I've worn a filthy jersey maybe two before on this, but I figured it was appropriate with Philadelphia winning the championship.
An homage to Philly's win.
A little slight tip of the hat, even though they have never worn green, and this shirt is green.
Fair
enough. Some of them were on the filthy team from time to time, more so now than before, as I'm not on the team anymore. So there's more room for actual Philadelphia people.
There's more room
people.
For other people from Philadelphia.
So,
yeah.
You know, congratulations, Philadelphia. You earned your championship.
They earned their championship. Congrats, Philly. Congrats to Portland. Like, it was a good run. And I'm sure we'll probably see you next year.
I hope so.
and that's all the time. We're going to get out of here. And we're going to talk more about this game, I bet, in the future. But for now, we'll leave. You can get me at Nick Darling, N-I-C Darling. You can get Dusty at Dust Tweeter, D-U-S-T-W-E-E-T-R. And you can get us both at Cleats Cufflinks. Watch the game.
Do watch the game.
Still at MLULive.com. We're going to leave it up there for a little while embedded because we don't have any other live games coming up in the near future. And we're going to continue producing cool stuff through the offseason. Continue doing great things, and we'll see you next time on Cleats and Cufflinks.